Sutta Goswami says, as soon as Garuda touched that very strong branch of the tree with his 2 feet, it snapped. But Garuda held on to it. And as he smilingly looked upon that huge broken branch, he observed the celestial Balakilyas hanging from it face down. Now it's going to get more complicated. The Balakilyas are a group of important sages who are very tiny. Fearful of harming them, that ruler of birds then swooped down and grabbed the branch in his mouth. Anxious to set them down safely, Garuda flew about the skies as gently as possible. But whenever he tried to land in that mountainous region, he would break the mountains to pieces. Now he's got the elephant, the tortoise, an 800-mile branch with all the Balakilya sages, and he can't find an open runway. Thus, out of compassion for the Balakilyas, Garuda flew to many lands, still holding the elephant and the tortoise, but he found no place to alight. Garuda finally approached the best of mountains, the unperishing peak known as Gandhamadana. There he saw his father, Kashyapa, engaged in austerity. Kashyapa saw his sky-going son, who shone with divine beauty, who was filled with fiery and heroic strength, moving swiftly as the mind and with the power of the wind, who appeared like a great mountain peak, rearing his head like the staff of Brahma, who was inconceivable, unapproachable, and frightening to all creatures, who wielded mystic potency in his person, as relentless as blazing fire, who could not be threatened or conquered by the gods or demons, who was a cleaver of mountain peaks, who could dry up the rivers and make the world tremble by his glance, which was as frightening as the face of death. Witnessing the arrival of his son and understanding his intentions, the exalted Kashyapa spoke these words: "Son, don't do anything rash, lest you suddenly find yourself in trouble. Don't enrage the Balakilyas, who live by absorbing light, lest they burn you." Kashyapa, for his son's sake, approached the Balakilyas, who achieved perfection through austerity, pointing out to them the cause of his son's behavior. "O ascetics, whose wealth is austerity, Garuda's actions are ultimately meant for the good of all creatures. So won't you please allow him to carry out his mission?" At these words of glorious Kashyapa, the sages gave up the branch and departed together for the pure Himalayan range in search of austerity. When they had gone, the son of Vinata, his full mouth stretched by the branch, said to his father Kashyapa, "My lord, where can I leave this branch? Tell me, my lord, of a land where there are no Brahmins." Thereupon Kashyapa told his son of an uninhabited mountain whose valleys and caves are completely blocked off by snow, where other living beings cannot go even in their minds. Garuda first entered that great mountainous region with his mind and then speedily flew there with the branch, elephant, and tortoise. Even a long, thin strap cut from 100 hides could not bind round the mighty branch Garuda carried as he flew. In a short time, Garuda, the best of those who fly, had come a distance of 800,000 miles. As if in a single moment he had reached the mountain described by his father. And from the sky he released the great branch, and it fell with a loud sound. Struck by the winds from Garuda's wings, that king of mountains shook. Its trees came tumbling down, releasing showers of flowers. Lofty mountain peaks, rich with jewels, gold, and minerals, crumbled in all directions, making the great mountains sparkle. Many trees whose branches were bedecked with golden flowers were struck by the falling branch and shook and flashed like rain clouds flashing with lightning. Resplendent as gold, brilliantly mixed with the minerals of the mountain, those trees shone forth as if stained with the reddish rays of the rising sun. Then, standing on that mountain peak, the best of sky-goers, Garuda, ate both the elephant and the tortoise and flew up from the very top of the mountain at the speed of the mind. At that moment, ill omens appeared, signaling danger for the demigods. Now, this is better than any of these modern Star Wars or whatever. Some real high-tech stuff is coming. Indra's cherished thunderbolt weapon was disturbed and flashed with pain. Meteors smoking and flaming plummeted from the skies in broad daylight. All the personal weapons of the Vasus Rudras, Adityas, Sadyas, Maruts, and all of their gods began to attack one another. This had never happened before, even in the great wars between the gods and the demons. Cyclonic winds whipped the world and meteors fell everywhere. The cloudless sky roared menacingly, and Indra, god of gods, could only rain down blood. The garlands of the gods withered, and their fiery power was extinguished. Ill-boding, angry clouds thickly showered blood, and swirling dust damaged the upraised crowns of the heavenly ruler. Even Lord Indra, who performed 100 great sacrifices, was disturbed and frightened upon seeing these dangerous omens. And along with the other gods, he went and spoke to the heavenly priest Brihaspati. "My lord," he said, "why have these great and ghastly omens suddenly arisen? I do not see an enemy who could overcome us in battle." Brihaspati said, "O best of the gods, it is by your fault and carelessness, you who performed 100 sacrifices, and by the austerities of the Valakilyas, that a wonderful being has taken birth. He is the son of Kashyapa Muni and Vinata, a mighty sky-going creature who can take any shape at will, and who has now come to take away the heavenly somajus. That winged being is the best of the strong, and he is capable of stealing the somajus," which was churned up in the ocean. "Indeed, I think anything is possible for him. He can accomplish the impossible." Suta Goswami said, "Hearing these words, Lord Indra then declared to the guardians of the celestial nectar, 'A bold and powerful bird is trying to steal the soma. I'm clearly warning you so that he doesn't take it by force. Brihaspati has told me that our foe possesses incomparable strength.' Hearing this command, the demigods were amazed, and in a determined effort, they stood at their posts, surrounding the prized nectar. Indra himself stood with them, wielding his thunderbolt, wearing invaluable golden armor, variously embellished with jewels. The skillful gods raised up by the thousands their finely honed razor-edged weapons. They seized all their glaring, faint, flaming weapons, which sizzled and smoked with power. They raised whirling discs and bludgeons, tridents, battle axes, and all manner of burning spears and flawless swords, along with fighting clubs of awesome look. Every weapon was handsomely fitted to its owner's body. Holding all those glowing weapons, the shining hosts of gods, adorned with celestial jewels, stood fearlessly with pure, brave hearts, fixed in their resolve to guard the nectar. Unique in their strength, courage, and power, those celestial beings who had shattered the cities of the gods, who had shattered the cities of the godless, stood with bodies shining like kindled fire. Thus the demigods made their stand on that great battlefield that spread beyond the horizon, crowding it with their hundreds and thousands of devastating clubs, so that it shone brightly in the pleasant rays of the sun." Shonaka said, "O son of Roma Arsana, what was Indra's fault? And how was he so careless that by the austerities of the Valakilyas, Garuda, king of birds, took birth as the son of Kashyapa, son of sage Kashyapa? How did Garuda become so invincible that no living being can slay him? How does that great airborne creature take any shape he wills? How does his power grow at his mere wish? If the answers to these questions are to be found in the ancient Puranic histories, I would like to hear them." So there's a brief description now of how Garuda was born, and then an amazing, super high-tech battle. Suta Goswami said, "The topic on which you question me is indeed found in the Puranas. Please attend, O Brahmana, as I summarize the entire story. Once the progenitor Kashyapa, desiring a son, was engaged in offering a sacrifice, and the sages, demigods, and Gandharvas were assisting him. Kashyapa empowered Lord Indra, employed Lord Indra in bringing wood for the sacred fire." Kashyapa, of course, is the father of Indra. "And the sages known as the Valakilyas were also engaged, as were other demigods. The powerful Indra lifted a load befitting his might, and thus without difficulty brought what appeared to be a mountain of firewood. He then saw on the road a group of sages, each of whom was as small as the curved joint at the base of a thumb. Together they were carrying one small leaf." But because of having fasted the tiny ascetics had almost sunk into their own limbs. And thus weakened, they struggled in the water that filled the calf's hoofness. Intoxicated with his own power and filled with pride, the mighty Indra laughed at them and then insulted them by quickly stepping over their heads. Imagine the scene. Lord Indra is carrying a mountain of firewood. And he sees this huge group of little tiny sages, about that big. And all of them together are struggling to carry one little leaf. And they're not making it. And they fell into a cow's hoof print. They're just not making it. So Indra, as we say, he just starts laughing. Indra starts laughing. And the funniest thing he ever saw, he just steps right over their heads with his mountain of firewood. So, a terrible anger arose within the sages, and at once they gave full expression to their fury, undertaking a mighty effort that would bring fear to proud Indra. The accomplished ascetics chanted with precision a variety of mantras, offering them into the sacrificial fire. Hear from me what those learned ones wished to achieve. This is their chanting. Let there be another Indra, vowed the sages with determination. A new ruler for all the gods, endowed with all the strength he desires, one who can go where he wishes, bringing fear to the celestial king. Swift as the mind, bearing 100 times the valor and strength of Indra, may that dreaded being arise today by the fruit of our austerity. When he learned of the solemn oath, the king of the gods, performer of 100 sacrifices, was much disturbed, and went at once to Kashyapa with rigid vows. After hearing from the celestial king, the progenitor Kashyapa approached the Valakilyas forthwith and asked them if their sacrifice was succeeding. The honest Valakilyas replied to him, succeed it must. The progenitor Kashyapa, hoping to pacify them, said, it is by the order of Brahma that this current Indra occupies his post. Yet all of you ascetics are endeavoring to create another Indra. O pious one, you should not render false the word of Brahma. Yet, your own determined plan should likewise not prove false. Let there thus arise among the race of birds a great being of exceeding strength and glory, an Indra of the winged creatures, and let there be mercy toward the king of the gods who begs for it. Thus requested by Kashyapa, the Valakilyas, rich with austerities, honored that best of sages and said to him, O progenitor, our endeavor to produce another Indra was also meant to bring you a son. Therefore, please take command of this powerful sacrifice and do as you think proper. And of course, Garuda was born as the son of Kashyapa. At that very time, Daksa's lovely daughter, Vinata, of high reputation and kindly nature, longed to have a son, and she performed austerities with great devotion and observed the fast called Pumsavana, in which a wife who seeks progeny takes a vow to subsist temporarily on whole milk alone. She then cleansed her body and in a purified state approached her husband. Kashyapa told her, O goddess, you shall achieve your desire, for you will be the mother of two heroic sons who will rule the three worlds. It is by the austerities of the Valakilyas, as well as my own desire, that you will have two exalted sons who will be honored by all people. So now we're coming to the battle. And then we'll wrap this up. The progenitor, Kashyapa, then said to Lord Indra, these two birds shall assist you as your brothers. No wrong will come to you by contact with them. O destroyer of hostile cities, let your worries be dispelled. You alone shall be Indra. But never again can you thus insult sages, learned in the absolute, or deride them out of pride. For when they are angered, their wrath is fierce, and their words burn like poison. Hearing these words, Indra was relieved of his anxiety and returned to his celestial home, and Vinata, her wish fulfilled, became joyous and gave birth to two sons, Aruna and Garuda. Of the two, Aruna was crippled and became the dawn that heralds the sun. Garuda, however, was anointed as the chief ruler, the Indra himself, of all winged creatures, a child of the Bhrigu race, hear now of his most extraordinary deeds. So now here comes the battle between Indra, the demigods, and Garuda. Thereafter, O best of the twice born, in the midst of all this excitement, the king of birds, Garuda, came swiftly upon the demigods. Now you'll see all the different levels of defense, super advanced technology, all these different levels of defense they have to guard the nectar, which is their most valuable possession. Just like in America, they have Fort Knox, or they have the Pentagon, or so many lines of defense. Now you'll hear about how the demigods, all the technology they have in their military. this is operation, I don't know if you call it, Deva Storm. So as the demigod spied his approach and noted his surpassing strength, they became utterly shaken and began to clasp one another and take hold of all their weapons. Among them stood Vishwakarma, mighty beyond imagining, and as brilliant as lightning or fire, who with his most unusual strength protected the heavenly nectar. He fought a matchless battle against that lord of birds, but after fighting for a short time, he was laid low, wounded by the wings, beak, and talons of Garuda. By the winds from his wings, the great bird stirred up huge dust clouds that darkened the world and covered the god. Covered with dust, blinded and bewildered, the demigod could not see the attacking bird. And in that tumult, the guardians of the nectar were separated from one another. Thus did Garuda throw the very heavens into disorder, and he tore at the god with his wings, beak, and talons. Then Lord Indra, with his thousands of eyes, quickly commanded the wind, "Dispel the shower of dust, O Maruta. Be that your task." The mighty wind at once drove away the dust, and the darkness now removed, the gods pressed in hard upon Garuda. Yet even as the legions of gods were attacking the great bird, he let loose a powerful roar like the thundering of clouds, and struck fear into the hearts of all creatures. The king of birds, slayer of great foes, flew high into the sky and hovered above the gods, bristling with powerful might. Clad in armor, the celestial denizens proceeded to shower every variety of weapon upon him, attacking Garuda on all sides with spears, iron bludgeons, tridents, clubs, and flaming, razor-sharp discs that sped like the sun. But the king of birds was not to be shaken, and he fought back with wild vengeance. The fierce and fiery son of Inata roared in the sky and hurled the gods all around with the power of his wings and breast. Harassed and thrown here and there by Garuda, the gods took to flight, wounded by his nails and feet, spilling their blood profusely. Thus routed by the Indra of birds, the Satyas and Gandharvas fled to the east, and the Vasus and Rudras to the south. The Adityas ran to the west, and the Ashwinis to the north. And as they all ran, they repeatedly gazed back upon the great and powerful being with whom they were locked in battle. The sky-ranging Garuda then did full battle with the brave Ashwakunda, with the winged Renuka, with the heroic Shura, then with Kapana, Uluka, and Shasana, with the winged Nimesha, and then with Paruja and Paliha. Vainateya, Garuda, ripped apart his foes with his wings, talons, and pointed beak, raging like the mighty Shiva at the moment when the millennium comes to an end and everything is annihilated. Great in potency and in spirit, the celestial guards were nonetheless severely wounded by their mighty foe and poured out their blood like bursting clouds. The best of all who fly, having brought these great warriors to the ends of their lives, stepped over them to pursue the nectar. But he then saw fire all around, with the fearful wind whipping the sharp, cutting blades. The great fire covered the skies and appeared to burn the very heavens with its flames. The great soul Garuda instantly made for himself 90 times 90 mouths. And these mouths very swiftly drank up many rivers and then speedily moved upon the fire. So isn't that 8,100? 90 times 90? With 8,100 mouths, he drank up all the rivers and came back like a super fire brigade. Propelled by powerful wings, this tormentor of foes extinguished the blazing conflagration with the river waters and then reduced his body to an extremely small size. But with the fire now extinguished, Garuda wished to enter the storehouse of the celestial nectar. Suta Goswami said, As river waters pushed their way into the sea, so Garuda, whose golden body glowed with the radiance of the sun and moon, forcibly entered the well-guarded sanctuary where the nectar was housed. Therein he beheld an ever-whirling iron wheel, rimmed all around with razor-sharp blades, fiery as the sun and unspeakably dangerous. The horrible device had been well built by the gods to slice to pieces any who would steal the nectar. But the great bird saw a way through the wheel, and shrinking his body, spun in time with the deadly wheel, and suddenly dashed through its spokes. Yet behind the wheel lurked two extraordinary serpents, of exceeding strength, shining like a blazing fire with fiery faces, fiery eyes, and tongues like bolts of lightning. Indeed, they could spew mortal poison with their very eyes. Always staring furiously with ranging, unblinking eyes, they were so deadly that if even one of them merely beheld an intruder, the luckless person would be instantly burned to ashes. Garuda gazed upon the two guardians of nectar, and before they could see him, covered their eyes with dust. Unseen, he rushed hard upon the snake, driving and battering them from all sides. The son of Inanna trampled them under his talons and immediately tore them to pieces, then rushed in where the nectar lay. The mighty and heroic son of Inanna carefully lifted the nectar, and then, wrecking the razor-edged wheel, he took to the sky in great haste. Without drinking a drop of nectar, the heroic bird carried it quickly away and flew untiringly through the heavens, withholding the sunlight with his great wings. As he cruised through the skies, Garuda suddenly came upon the imperishable Lord Vishnu. This is how Garuda met Vishnu, who was pleased with him for his unique accomplishment and selfless act. Garuda did not desire the nectar for himself. The Lord thus said to the great bird, "I shall give you whatever you desire." The high-flying bird chose his benediction and said, "May I ever remain above you." Garuda did not fully understand at that point the identity of Lord Vishnu, and therefore he asked to stay above the Lord, though he did appreciate the Lord's immense power. And thus he again spoke to Lord Narayan these words, "May I be ageless and immortal even without taking the nectar." These boons were granted, and after accepting them, Garuda addressed Lord Vishnu, "I now offer a benediction to you. Even though you are the Lord, please select a boon." Lord Krishna selected the mighty Garuda himself as his personal carrier. The Lord then placed the image of Garuda upon his chariot flag so that Garuda could indeed remain above him. The Lord thus fulfilled his promise.
Yeah.